this month, lots of things happening. This is Suicide Prevention Month. It is also National Recovery Month, among many other things. And we have announced that we're having some call-in shows with regards to that, as well as some people telling their stories of recovery. So we have someone here today who would like to share her experiences and stories, and we're remaining anonymous for this. And you, I understand you said you were a recovering addict and alcoholic.
Yes.
And so what types of things, what were you addicted to? Alcohol, you mentioned, but...
Alcohol and also drug addict. Heroin was my drug of choice. There's also a movie coming up called Chasing the Dragon, which is about that, at the Discovery Center on the 20th. And I suffer from the family disease of alcoholism, and I came into the support group, and I thought it was the end of the story. I thought it was the worst thing that could ever happen. And what I found out was that it was just the beginning. I found out a lot about alcoholism. I found out that alcoholism is a disease, usually a family disease. It can be genetic, or it can just be you drink and cross the line and there's no going back. But the thing that amazed me the most, that helped me, was then I discovered that when I take a drink, the phenomenon of craving occurs and I cannot put it down. That I will not stop at just one drink, that I will drink until whatever happens, happens. And that was a real changing point for me. The recovery process has been very difficult, because it's very difficult when you come up against those triggers of whatever they may be to not have something to numb you out so that you don't have to feel. It's been an amazing process, and I was so fortunate when I came in, because I got into a group where people shared their experience, strength, and hope. You know, the judgment of ourselves, the non-acceptance of ourselves, we expect that in everyone else. You know, I expected, because I didn't accept myself, that you would reject me, and so I was afraid to show who I really was. And I think sometimes I wasn't always so sure who that was, because I was so much a part of being what you wanted and trying to fit in. And, you know, alcoholism is so amazing, because it's a disease that tells you that you don't have a disease, and that's a pretty hard part to get past, the denial. I've been with people who have gone to detox with late-stage alcoholism, esophageal bleeding, in a coma for 6 weeks, and yet they get out and they go back to drinking because that's what they know. And I just got a call from someone who has now had over a year of recovery, who was that person. And she's waiting for a liver transplant. And so what I say always is that this is a disease that you come in absolute hopelessness. But my message is of hope, because if I cannot drink and not do drugs, then I know that can happen for anybody.
And when you speak of the group, you're talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, correct?
That's a group, yes. Yes, there's also Narcotics Anonymous. There's many programs available for people. And what I love about them is that they're based on experience, strength, and hope. One alcoholic helping another, or one addict helping another.
At what age did you start, say, drinking or start doing drugs?
I started that in high school. I had very low self-esteem. I did not feel like I fit in. I felt different. And so I started to drink. And the first time I took a drink, it was like a magic experience. All of that anxiety, all of that self-doubt, all diminished. And I was transformed into what I always thought I could be until the drink wore off. And I always tease about, there's 20 seconds you get when you're drinking that you can play the best pool and you could do the best song. And after that 20 seconds, it's a no-go. So, but yeah, in high school, and it progressed from there.
And you, what types of drugs did you use? You mentioned
mostly,
heroin, but what did you
mostly say? Mostly I drank. I was not a pot smoker. It was too difficult for me to handle. It was not something that I was fond of. I got introduced to heroin when I was out of state in Arizona, and kind of pushed to have that opportunity. It wasn't pushed on me, but once I did that, it was they call it chasing the dragon for a reason. And and it escalated, and I quit doing that. I think the last time I put a needle in my arm was in 1972, and that was the end of that, luckily for me. I also contracted hepatitis A, B, and C, of which I just went through the program. There's a drug out there now that can absolutely give you cure, and I am now free of all that. I have the antibodies to A and B, so that I'll never have to do a vaccine. But that and HIV, there are a lot of things that go along with the use of needles today that are really rampant in Alaska, particularly, especially southeastern Alaska. Hepatitis is up on the rise, and HIV also.
What made you decide to quit? How were you able? My understanding is heroin is very difficult to get off of.
It is very hard, and it was very hard. I knew that if I didn't get off of that drug, I was going to die out there. And I actually called my mother, and she said, come home, and I kicked at my family's home in my old bedroom. And it was very painful. As most junkies know, kicking heroin is very difficult. And I just did it, and I didn't do alternative things. I just knew that I needed to get off of that drug, and I was lucky that I stayed off of it. I did not quit drinking at that point. I continued that and cocaine use, and they escalated, and inevitably I had a family member that got sober, and I looked at him and thought, well, if he can do it, then maybe I can do it. And so I went to him and said, I think I'm an alcoholic. And he said, well, go try some controlled drinking. And I thought, well, yes, that means I'm not an alcoholic. And then the next time I went to him, I said, I am alcoholic and I need help.
And so controlled drinking would be just having a drink now and again. Is that what you mean? Or
that, or maybe I'll just have one or two on the way home. Maybe I'll drink one bottle. But for an alcoholic, there is no limiting the drinks. They will have a life of their own. Once that phenomenon of craving occurs, it's very hard to put that drink down.
And you, how long have you been sober?
32 years, clean and sober.
Wow. And how difficult was it to make that
difficult? Difficult because a lot of the things that happened for me as far as powerlessness occurred in my sobriety. I was in a boat accident in the Bering Sea that I developed a really bad case of PTSD, which I still deal with on a daily basis. I came down with a brainstem inflammation, and I couldn't see for a while. My eyes moved. And so there's been a lot of things, but what saved me was the foundation that I got in the beginning. And it was pushed into me 90 meetings in 90 days. Don't drink no matter what, which is a hard thing to believe because if it was that simple, it isn't about willpower. It's about willingness. And that's what I've done throughout the course of my sobriety. I have worked with others, and I'm very dedicated to that because I know for me, that is the only thing that separates me from a drinker is that I am in sobriety and that I don't pick up that first drink.
Did you have to change, say, your relationships, your friendships, your social life? I would guess you would to do this.
I was very lucky because I had been living in Fairbanks. I had come from Seattle is where I came from Fairbanks to get sober, went to treatment, went back to Alaska, had a relapse, ended up in Fairbanks, and went back to treatment again, and I was in Seattle. So everybody that I met at the time was in the program. And those relationships today are still some of my best friends. I have the same sponsor I had from the first or second year. She has worked with me. But yeah, it was very difficult, and it's very difficult in a small town where you've been an addict to change your friends because our friends are usually people we've known our entire life. So to find a place to fit in is very difficult. But that's what I love about the programs is that the support is there. And it usually seems that the people you come in with, you kind of bond with in a way, people in treatment that know who we really are, what we really feel and our fears. It's pretty amazing, but they call it changing your playgrounds. Yeah. Very hard to be sober if you're hanging around with people that are doing drugs and drinking, you know, especially in families as well. It can be very difficult. So it is a hard road to do, but it is possible, very possible.
And is this something that you will, I guess, always be in recovery in a sense?
I will be in recovery probably till my last day because if I pick up a drink, I'll go right back to where I started. It's a progressive disease, and Where I ended up stopping is where I'll pick up when I pick up another drink, and I've attempted that, and so I know that from experience. It does not go away for an alcoholic.
So you continue to go to programs here?
I would take it? Yeah, okay. Yeah, very supportive of that, and I live by, you know, the fact that I will not pick up a drink, and yeah.
What do you, there's a lot of, I know heroin is a big problem in this community, as well as alcoholism and other things. Do you see, just in your experiences, things here very different from when you, you know, back in the 70s?
I think there's more. I think heroin is more acceptable now than it was back then. I think it is more available. I think it's cheaper than pharmaceuticals. I think that it is as common. I don't know if this is an accurate assumption, but I would say it's pretty common, and I think drinking as well. But yeah, there is a lot of that, as well as meth and other drugs now that people are using. And I think there is a frustration of this generation that they're not sure where to fit in and how to go about things. I think some technology might be taking away that one-on-one personal contact. But I think it's a time where, you know, I think young people are very confused. I know I was when I was in high school. I think that hasn't changed so much.
And I'm sure there's people out there listening who are themselves struggling. Is it something, though, you need to know, I guess, know and recognize you have a problem and then decide you want help? What is the process?
The hardest part about this is it's all these programs in recovery in general are not necessarily for people who need it. It's for people who want it. And you have to know that that's what you want more than you want to take a drink or a drug. And that's the hardest line to come to, because families can want their children, teenagers particularly, to get help, go to treatment. The parents would love that. But if the children aren't there or the teenagers aren't there, it's really hard to you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And so, yeah, it's, you definitely have to want it. And what usually occurs is a level of powerlessness or humiliation that brings you to the decision that, yeah, I can't go on like this. They call it the jumping off place. I'm going to die if I drink, and I'm going to die if I don't. And that is usually where you have to be to come to that place.
So perhaps, I don't know if you would have some, I think you probably would have good advice for people who, they do have a relative or a child, friend that they're concerned about. What is the best way to help support that person?
Educate themselves on the disease, because it isn't the child that's bad, it's the disease that's bad. And there are a lot of things that, and a lot of support groups for parents, but find out how you can be there. The judgments and the hard nose, you're this, you're that, kind of puts a wedge, I think, between us. I think understanding and compassion, and you know, it isn't about willful. Somebody, if they can love their children so much, they would die for them, like was just said on the news, but they couldn't quit drinking for their children. So I think the best thing is to find out about these things and what drives that, and how to bring it to a place of compassion, and where the person is going to want to open up their heart to whatever's being said instead of pushing away from it. Because it's a very shameful thing. You know, you feel like you're less than and worthless just alone. And then you bring on the alcoholism and the drug addiction, and it's even worse. So I think mainly understanding and not enabling, that's another big one. You know, you do not want to enable someone who is in that position.
And give examples of enabling.
Paying their rent all the time when they're in trouble, bailing them out of jail. Sometimes we have to face our consequences. You know, what I've learned is that for everything you do, there's a reward and a consequence. And I think I've learned more by the consequences than I did by the rewards. It's just the way life seems to work. But you can love your child and have boundaries on what you're going to do for them. But always bailing them out teaches them that they don't have to do it for themselves, I think.
Okay. And I see you have a book with you. Is there something from this that you wanted to share? Or
Many less desperate alcoholics tried AA but did not succeed because they could not make the admission of hopelessness. And that is my message. It's a message of hope that there is recovery available and it can work for you.
Okay. Is there anything else that you would like to share?
No. Okay. I'm just very grateful today that I can get up in the morning and get up and look at the beautiful sunset instead of going, oh, my God, how did I get home and where's my car? What did I do? How did I get here? Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for being here. Again, one of these stories of recovery, we will share another story, actually a story of a couple, next Wednesday at about this time, 8:30. And also next Monday, we will have a call-in show on suicide prevention.